Welcome to Modular March. I'm Andy, this is Robbie, and we are The Roll-Up.
Modular March is an educational experience about all things modular. Enjoy.
Today with John, J. Cole, not the rapper, from Hyperling. If you watched our recent interview, we had a really short conversation about modular expansion, and today we're going to expand upon that. So John, welcome in, and would love to learn more from you today and hear about modular expansion.
Yeah, no, Andy, it's good to be back. Always fun to be on here with you boys, whether it's, you know, when we're recording in person like we did in Denver, or, you know, another more like studio episode like we did before. I'll spare folks, you know, a broad introduction and like life story. If people want that, definitely they can check out the first episode we did. We had a bit too much fun on that one. So I'm here from Hyperlane, and like just a little bit of context. What we're doing with Hyperlane is we are building the world's first truly open framework for interoperability. Something that should let anyone connect any chain and do it on their terms. Kind of what I liken it to is, yes, in 2024, there are ways for you to connect your chain with others, but it involves generally like this off-chain, backroom, conversational BD type process. You need to go and prove to one of these interoperability providers they're kind of worthy of their time investment. And despite your best efforts, the moment you get outside of the IBC ecosystem, like you can't do things yourself, you can't maintain, you can't do them on your terms, you can't do it while maintaining your sovereignty until Hyperlane comes in. And so what we're doing is we're taking what was an off-chain and kind of opaque, you know, BD process, and we are putting it on-chain, we're making it transparent, we're letting anyone do it. So to your first question, like, what does modular expansion really mean to us? Well, you know, the reason we started kind of using that phrase and throwing it around everywhere is because we've had what I consider to be like the big bang of the modular ecosystem somewhere in Q4 last year, call it right around beginning of November. And that was the culmination of a bunch of events. Celestia's launch was the headliner. It gave us the first alternative DA layer, and so really opened the gate for it. But it wasn't just that. It was a few other things all coming together at the same time. Notably, right, the continued like maturation of the roll-up frameworks, right? So like the amazing work by people at Arbitrum and Optimism with the roll-up frameworks, the great work by the roll-up providers like Caldera and Conduent and AltLayer and others. All of these, when put together, made it really, really, really easy for the first time to create your own chain, your own roll-up. So much so that like, it could actually be done in, you know, hours to a couple days, and soon will probably be minutes versus what was a multi-month process beforehand. And so start seeing, okay, this big bang's happening, or we're getting an increasing number of rollups. Now this is moving towards the expansion phase. You're starting to see these coming out on a regular cadence. But what we've believed in Hyperlane, what we've argued, is that like it doesn't really make sense to talk about the modular stack without talking about interoperability. You have all these trends, and all they're doing is like driving down the cost of creating the next rollup. Well, that's great. That means that more and more rollups are going to be created. But how do they connect to each other? How do they connect to existing chains? How do they transfer value? Like, if you think of, right, a lot of people, I'm one of them, like the analogies of like blockchains as cities, as population centers. Well, like, how many people want to move to a new city that's in the middle of the desert and has no airport, no roads, you can't connect, you know, like there are some people who would want that, who completely want to live like off the grid. Generally speaking, you want to have commerce and trade routes, and you want to have a way to go between that city and the established ones. That's how cities can grow much more quickly. And so Hyperlane by this virtue of it being a completely open framework that anyone can use to connect any chain, now serves this role of being the connective tissue and a thing that really accelerates the modular expansion. And so that's kind of how we view it. I'm happy to get into like much more detail about what that means in practice, how we help bring this about, how we work with different teams, and you know, anything you or the audience might want to know.
For sure. So when it comes to kind of connecting these execution environments, these roll-ups together, is there any process that, if I'm a new roll-up that is launching, is there any process that I have to go through in order to be deemed ready or appropriate to connect to Hyperlane such that other connections won't be affected if I was a malicious roll-up or if I went down?
Great, great question. The like most honest, clearest answer, there is not, no. Because Hyperlane is a totally open framework, anyone can use it to bring it to any chain. And now that chain is kind of eligible. Think of it as now having the correct parts, the right plugs and sockets to connect with any other chain that has Hyperlane. But does that mean that like, hey, if I put Hyperlane on my chain, am I by default connected to every chain in the world that has Hyperlane? No, it does not. So in Hyperlane, like an integration entails three moving parts. And let's cover them like at a really high level. One hand, we have the mailbox. Think of this as like the base contract that people interact with. This is the things that sends and receives messages between chains. It's completely on chain and so far as like the different parts of the system. Our second part is a security module. In Hyperlane, instead of saying like, hey, we're the smartest people in the world, we know how to secure this thing, we figured the crypto industry is full to the brim, right? It's teeming with innovators on the security front. So much so that like the state of the art of this year is gonna be junk by next year, right? For myself, you know, I've been around since 2017 and like you could really see how every year, you know, the state of the art kind of obsoletes everything that's come before it. And so it was imperative to design a system that really could absorb anything, any type of security mode the system can adapt to. So a Hyperlane security module, really what it is, it's a basic wrapper on anything that provides either a state attestation, think like a validator system, a staking-based system, or a state proof, think like, you know, some light line verification, some ZK magic, anything of that sort. So we need at least one security module to be operating on the chain if we're going to have an integration. So that was the first two parts, mailbox, second part, security module. Third part is the relayer. It's basically like an off-chain bot. It looks at the different chains that you want to connect. So let's say like your chain and Robbie's chain. And it just needs to look at the mailbox. It sees, oh, Andy is trying to send something from his chain to Robbie's. I see Andy's a nice guy, he's paying this fee. Cool. I then look at the security module that is operating on Andy's chain, and I see that it's signed off. It provided these signatures. I take those signatures to the mailbox on Robbie's chain, and now the mailbox processes that message, checks if the signatures are valid. And so within, like if you have these three parts operating, that means you have a Hyperlane connection established. But in practice, what happens is with those three things there, any developer can now use these pathways. But when they do that, what they're saying is like, let's say someone comes to your chain, Andy. They now can't connect with any other chain that has Hyperlane, but they need to define and they need to say, hey, I want to accept something from Ethereum. I see that there's these three or four different security modules running on Ethereum. I like module number B the best. It's my favorite one. It seems to me the most secure. Maybe that's the one that runs like with some ZK magic. And that is the module that I'll accept for my applications. And so in that sense, it's very much like an opt-in system, right? So no one on Andy's chain yet received something from Hyperlane just because we put it on there. No one can deny us from receiving something, but Once it's there, now as a developer, I can choose. I can say, hey, I want to receive messages on Andy's chain. I want those messages to come from Ethereum, and I want them to come through like that module. And so in that sense, like someone would basically have to create like a malicious module and then fool people into choosing it. And so that, of course, can happen, right? Like bad people do, you know, there are scams everywhere. There are bad people doing bad things. But that's the, I guess, the set of trade-offs you get with a totally permissionless system. So we built a system that's very permissionless. We create it in with this very much like an opt-in type of design. But still, people can opt in to something that is fraudulent. Like there was one time in my early beginnings in crypto, I opted in with my money into some wonderful coins that I thought were great, like Deep Brain Chain, great project from 2017. And I may have opted into something that wasn't very real. But, you know, I certainly thought it was very real. I was totally into Deep Brain Chain.
I remember that one. Rob does
too.
Oh,
it was a great one.
Yeah.
I think, sure, it's still going. I'm sure they're still working hard.
That's the beauty of blockchains. People don't understand is that they just run in perpetuity as long as some entity or entities are validating the network or mining it. So I'm going to pick
they've
and prod a
they've
bit.
Been building AI ever since, man.
You're going to pick and prod a bit about kind of like this wrapping process. So basically what you're explaining is that you're almost like an API wrapper for a lot of these projects. Do you feel that like there's some sort of problematic scenarios which can come from kind of that wrapping process of these different projects?
Totally. Yeah. Now, I think, you know, right, like, from our perspective, we believe very much in like transparency and openness. Maybe it's like the direct nature of like the Israeli in me, but it's much easier to just like start off and talk about all the things that could go wrong, right? And like just being very upfront about it. So in this world, anyone can create a module, right? And we hope that the people who create a module do it on the up and up. And that what they're doing is like they're saying, hey, either I created a certain security innovation or I have observed an open source security innovation and I want to wrap it. And so based on that, we hope that everyone will do the right thing and will just actually wrap true innovations as security modules. But someone else could say, hey, look at me. I follow the instructions. I have created a module that, you know, I'll call it, let's say the wonderful ZK module. And so like they could totally like wrap something malicious, right? Where they say that it's one thing, but in practice, it is absolutely not that thing. They could advertise for it. They could do everything in their power to make it seem legitimate, maybe even operate it legitimately for a long while. And kind of, you know, create a sort of like long con. And then one day after they've had enough, you know, hardworking, honest developers kind of using their module, they could rug. In the same way that like, you know, a project can, like a DeFi project can say, you know, run legitimately for a really long time and then just like rug all of its depositors or something like that. And so, it is totally possible. And like the things that we can do to combat that are more, again, keeping everything open source, like never, never, ever allowing for a module to like receive some type of stamp of approval unless like all the contracts are verified, unless everything is open source, unless everything is like totally visible. I would say actually, like I'm less concerned at this point with things being malicious then I am concerned with just honest to God good mistakes, you know, like people who are well intentioned and then still things go wrong, right? Like if you think about most of the security incidents in crypto, especially in our sector, almost all of them are actually like exploits that are born out of a mistake in the code. And so those are much harder to prevent, right? Like if someone's doing something nefarious, like you take an eye to it, you might be able to spot it, and it would take a really sophisticated, like, long con to fool, you know, talented developers that code that isn't malicious, or sorry, the code that is malicious isn't. What's much harder to catch is like just a tiny, tiny mistake somewhere that in the right conditions can be used to like upend the entire thing. And that's always like the danger of, again, a totally open and permissionless system. It's why, like, actually, if you think of the world of like computing in general, you know, on PCs, everything was like totally open. You could install whatever you wanted. But there was, you know, like, I guess I'm a little, you know, I'm old now, but all my friends, I was like the tech guy, or, you know, like the tech nerd, and people would want me to come install stuff for them. Or like when they were downloading, they would ask me and my buddy, like, where should we download from? Because the internet was like a very, you know, dangerous place. You didn't want to get a virus on your machine. Then with the advent of smartphones and the App Store, you finally got like a much more curated version. And so it was sort of open, like anyone could create something and could petition to be on the store and then could go through a process. And yes, they could get revoked at any moment in time, sometimes without any notice about why. But it actually, like, I think advanced computing because it opened it up to a much like less sophisticated crowd. And right, like people didn't have to worry. Like you rarely worry that something you download from the App Store will be malicious. And so that had to be like a curation experience from like Apple, a massive company that even at the time when it wasn't, you know, one of the 20 largest companies in the world and wasn't one of the largest two like it is today, they still had the resources to enable that. But with a crypto system, how can we use like the incentives that, you know, crypto systems afford us to create a much more open version of this curation, such that like maybe you have incentives towards like, call them like different little watchdogs, which is like, yeah, trying to decide which are the clean modules. Like, how do we, you know, keep an eye on them and expose and elevate the good and clean ones and completely distance ourselves, you know, meaning as a community, from the bad ones, either because they're, you know, either they're bad because they're genuinely malicious, or they're bad because like there's just an error there that no one's caught. Like, how can you run a sort of like ImmuneFi or like Code Arena process on these different modules?
Is there, yeah, a,
and that's kind of why I was just, sorry, real quick, bro. I was trying to get into that because you guys are pushing permissionless very hard, which is great,
yeah,
and I think that's very important for the space. But if you kind of are missing some of the security components, you have to either like isolate the risk somehow of these different chains, as you kind of said that you've done, or basically what you have to stop is you have to stop somebody from creating a chain, integrating the Hyperlane SDK and just like basically minting a bunch of assets, you know, from just a random chain. Yeah, because I mean,
that actually like isn't a huge concern because again, like people have to kind of opt in to receive a connection from that chain and accept those like, and so that, gotcha, that part like in and of itself is not very concerning. The more concerning one is like the two I mentioned before. It's either like a malicious, you know, person creating a module that looks, you know, genuine and then like letting you use it and then one day just like pulling it, or a totally well-intentioned, good, you know, good actor that just misses something, right? Like it sucks, but that's probably going to happen at some point, right? Like it's happened to some of the best teams in crypto, and like you just have to have like security practices at all fronts, and like no team can get, you can never like have like hubris on your team such that like, you know, maybe there's someone who has an elevated status in the team. It's like, oh, well, we're not going to review their stuff because like they're super, they're so good. Like they're a security expert. They would never make a mistake. Like everybody makes a mistake. So there are like certain best practices you can do in developing the software to mitigate that. And then I think as a, you know, as a secondary and perhaps even more important measure, like how do you tap in to the structure of these open networks to the advantage of everyone who uses them? I'd like one way is to let anyone create the modules, but another is like, let anyone audit them. Let anyone like kind of express an opinion about which ones should rise to the top and which ones should kind of flounder.
So you mentioned how it's not so much about the chain because people opt into which chains they want to connect to. It's more about the security modules. And right now it's permissionless to create these security modules. Are you doing any, and you mentioned that like anyone can audit them, which is kind of like the validation mechanism to check, double check if there's any vulnerabilities with any of those modules. Is there an incentive mechanism, or generally how do you think about the potential vulnerability of either malicious or buggy security module? Like, what is the current practice to mitigate that now? And if there is any practice, I'm curious if there's an incentive mechanism that you could use to incentivize secure modules.
So there are two processes right now, which are the first, which I mentioned, is basically like internally multiple eyes on it, like anything that is going to touch funds, anything that's going to like serve as the substrate for different modules goes through multiple reviews and multiple reviewers. And that
Even
includes like,
permissionless.
Yes, because right, like before something is kind of merged, at least like the core team will have multiple eyes on it. Now, again, we can't stop you from like doing something in your own repo, but like if it's going to get merged into like the core repo, right? By now, it's not just like our core development team that runs that. There's a bunch of different contributors to that repo, but still like try to get eyes from multiple sources. And then, of course, like audits on some of the more prominent ones. And the second thing is kind of, you mentioned incentives, like having open bounties through systems like MUInfy. But I don't think it can end there. I think there has to be something more. So now, like us in conjunction with other teams are thinking through like which systems can you put in place? Because this is only going to get bigger. Right. And like we knew that Hyperlane as a mission is way too big for one team to execute. It's why we've taken this open approach. It's why we've encouraged outside contributions that eventually led to like the Mitosis team building the CosmWasm version, the Eclipse team starting off with the Solana version, the Movement Lab team, the Movement Labs team building both Aptos Move and SwiMove versions of Hyperlane. And again, now other people building like their own modules, but how do you extend that to not just providing the security, but also like the additional eyeballs, like who is going to be kind of like what I mentioned before with those, this concept of like the watchdogs.
Yep.
So I'd say we're still like, still a lot of work to do. But we are kind of the, you know, in constant deliberation with other people in the Hyperlane ecosystem to like, how do you scale this even further? Because these modules, again, like are to the benefit of everyone who uses Hyperlane. Like once one is out, anyone can use it wherever it's operating. And so we all want to have more of them and we all want to have more effective ones. And so everyone who uses, like you're a chain that's using Hyperlane, like it's in your best interest for there to be like cheaper, faster, better, like ZK modules. And so shouldn't you spend, if you have the capability to audit those or like help in the building of one, should you spend some time on it? The answer is obviously yes. But how can you sweeten that arrangement?
I would maybe push back on like, if I was like a rational hacker or a rational attacker, which is like a term that someone used on a spaceship a little while ago. If I'm a rational attacker and I see that I can get X from exploiting this and I would get Y from an MUInfy bug bounty and X is bigger than Y, then I would choose to attack the protocol rather than contribute to securing it. So I think it...
For sure. Like, oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, just that from the incentives perspective, this is like the cost of corruption. Like, this would mean that if there is a higher cost to corrupt it than to protect it, then we would expect an attacker to do whichever one's in their economical best interest.
You would for sure. Now, what I'll say is the best part, and it's the first time I'm like pretty happy. Not for the first time. I've been happy about like the presence of a justice system most of my life. That's a pretty, you know, Western civilization is pretty sick. I think it's awesome. I love living in America. I love having like a pretty well-functioning, despite all the people who have complained about our justice system, it's like generally is like well-functioning with some exceptions.
Right. There's legal
in that incentive calculation. Correct. Yeah. So like the cost of corruption, folks, we will talk about that, you know, depending on like what, let's say in like a proof of stakes, there are things that you could do that actually look like corruption, are clear like forms of malfeasance that don't fall under, like, they're not actual crimes per the justice. Luckily, you know what it is? Stealing money. And the justice system has been pretty clear. And I think that's why you've seen pretty much, if you look at like the last 18 to 24 months of hacks, they are all from people who are completely outside the system. Meaning like folks who that system does not recognize in any way, right? Like the, let's say, Lazarus groups. That's a criminal enterprise that is completely outside the bounds of the system. So of course, like wherever they can attack, they do. But like the, you know, the standard hackers who like maybe in 2018, 19, 2020 even would have like taken the money and run. Now they realize that like that's very, very difficult to do. And so that's why you're seeing all these negotiations. You're seeing this like, hey, I have your protocol hostage. I demand, you know, you mentioned, right, like I can get X or Y. I demand Y to be like some percentage of X, like say 5%, 10%. In that way, converting them into like, if you want to call them white hats, because they are kind of still doing something kind of nasty. But
yeah.
Converting them closer to the path of the light with dollars. And so you have to still be worried about like those extra judicial actors, right? Because like they're completely outside the system. They will always go for X because there is no point for them with Y. They just have a complete different calculation. The thing with them, they were never going to like support your security. And so they're just like, you know, there are bad guys in the world, and I'm not like here to, you know, decide on their morals, but like they do things that we would consider to be bad things, and you'd have a hard time changing them. I think with the emergence of the justice system into our space, right, like whether we want it or not, that has basically helped redefine the bounds properly, such that if you don't want to deal with that, like now you're much more likely to think about Y than you were about X. Almost irrespective of the delta, because like the calculation is now, it's not just, oh, I can, you know, I can get Y or I can get X. X is much larger. I'm going to get X. I can get X and then I have a cost associated with it, which might look like, you know, a certain prison somewhere in a contiguous United States, which is like not a place you want to go to.
Yeah. Or ending up in like a non-extradition country or something, but kind of. who knows where you're gonna end up, somewhere in like the Balkans or something.
So it's basically like, what can you not change? Like, we're not going to be able to change the way that people like Lazarus or, you know, folks of their capabilities and motivations are, and then how can we work with the ones that you can change, right? Someone who maybe like 2 years ago would have done something nefarious, but today is like much more incentivized to just like notify you of the issue, give them a big bounty. Because those people are actually really useful, right? Like, ImmuneFi has been useful for Hyperlink and to, you know, thousands of other projects as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're even furthering this idea behind like security for interoperability, and not so much just like with the legal ramifications, but like the incentive model. But even still, like, I'm gonna press and poke even further. Like, I think this idea of like unified API is not necessarily as strong as like unified security, because security kind of forces liquidity fragmentation. So, you know, let's say, you know, let's throw it back to like Harmony. Harmony got hacked, and even before they were hacked, the bridge was sketchy. People were kind of sketched out about it. And so, you know, the wrapped tokens there were a little bit lower, like USDT was 0.98 or a little bit lower. The yields were higher, right? Because you have to incentivize people to come over.
Yeah.
And so then you kind of have these like pockets of liquidity across different chains based almost on like the pricing of the wrapped tokens, as well as the yields based on like the security. So I'm not sure that like this like unified API of all chains is as good of a model as like a unified security model.
For sure. Like I think, you know, you can make like good arguments on either side. If you have something like unified security, say like shared security in one pool across everywhere, it does mean that a single like contamination, right, contaminates the whole pot. And so if you think about like what the modular movement represents, we started this off by talking about like what modular expansion really means. If we were going to deal with, say, like a well-known, well-established number of chains, call it like a couple dozen, something like that, then you could, you know, you could envision some like standardization emerging, and like we could all be civilized within it. We could police that really well. But the modular movement is creating basically like a complete open border policy. Anyone, you have a chain and you have a chain. Everybody gets to have a chain. And so in that one, right, like the concern that you first raised is like the correct one. In that shared security, like either I create like a very, very difficult, call it like immigration standard, which is, oh, if you want to join this pool, like you got to be this tall, you got to have like this good grades, you got to have like this track record, etc., which is of course going to be like a very limiting factor for the modular ecosystem's growth, but at the same time, like is kind of necessary because you don't want just anyone to be able to come in, benefit from this pool, and then also contaminate it. And so the biggest, you know, reason for us to opt for this model is, well, you want to give people more sovereignty, then like they can't just be immediately opted into some shared pool, and you have to silo the risk, right, such that, again, like, you know, one bad apple, because there's going to be more than one bad apple. We already know that, right? Like not even by intention, just by virtue of like, we talked about it again, more security incidents that have happened because of well-intentioned people making mistakes than there have been because of someone like maliciously, you know, creating something to rug people. Like the ruggers most often are like hackers that are exploiting well-intentioned but mistakenly written code. And so I think that's like, that's why for this ecosystem in particular, I think this model, it's true, it has its faults, but we just have to build around them and kind of like make do with them, because the alternative of just a completely shared model, it's too risky.
It's limiting, and then things, as well,
everyone is fucked. Even the best actors would be fucked in that model because they're all sharing the same, like they're basically, you know, you don't want to poison the well.
Yeah.
So you're permissionless, but because you're permissionless, the trade-off is you have to silo this risk or basically do some sort of like permissioned deployment of a sense where you guys have a team of reviewers who review these things, but then also in each individual component cannot affect the rest.
Basically like people have to opt in to communicating with you, right? Like, you know, okay, in that sense, I could get, you know, if I wanted to accept assets from, say, like if you wanted to accept assets from my chain and say like my chain becomes contaminated, then like only once you've opted in can you like, you know, get this sickness right here, can get this contamination. But the fact that like I have contamination on my side, until you opt into that, like you're in the clear. And so, right, like no free lunch, as they like to say.
Call that the East Denver cold. Don't want that.
The modular day after party cold. People didn't opt into that one, you know? That was a shared, we all shared in the same security of being in the same space, and, you know, a couple of germs walk in, and before you know it, everyone leaves with 5 days of decommissionment.
I had another analogy, but I think that one was even better.
Well, I wasn't, you know, Andy, you brought it up. I wasn't even thinking about that.
Well, I think I'm all out of questions to grill you with, John. I've checked all my lists off. Rob, do you have anything?
Love it.
My last question was going to be an analogy to cross margin lending markets and isolated lending markets, mm-hmm. and if that's a fair analogy. But well, and yeah, that feel free to answer that question. But I think the ETH Denver shared security model is even more accurate of an analogy.
So on the cross margin one, like it is similar in the sense that where like you so. If basically like you chose to, if the asset you chose to accept is like your cross margin collateral, if that becomes like shitty or unavailable for whatever reason, then the entire system is fucked. Now, while it's working and while it's great, everything is you know, everything is wonderful because we can galvanize around this like singular, you know, margin asset, and that's very convenient. But the moment that falls off. And so like, that's how you can have, you know, that risk not being siloed can affect the entire system. And that actually like is why, you know, when different venues like which extend the margin to their clients, like, you know, I used to work in Morgan Stanley, and like our prime brokerage, one of its key things was trying to have like a central risk book to understand like, what are our risks, you know, like we are extending margin to all these clients. And like, we have to understand what does our risk look like at any point. And when, as soon as you start spotting contamination, like they basically do the it's kind of like equivalent to amputation. It's like, there's something wrong with that client. Cut them off.
Makes sense.
And so in crypto, that's like, it's very difficult to design a permissionless system and do that at the same time, because like you lack the ability to cut things off in a coordinated sense. And so it's actually like, no, it's a, I would say it's a pretty good analogy.
Got it. Yeah. The idea of a contagion, I think, makes a lot of sense too.
Yeah. Well, it all comes from disease models. So, you know, that's why the Denver one made sense.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
I think relatively healthy after Denver. I don't know about you guys. Maybe I just have
me too. I got to say the immune system, you know, you go to enough Denvers, you know, you just build different.
You learn how to operate. It's like when you're interacting cross chain on Hyperlink, you're going to learn which modules to choose.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
John, I think I got one more, which is that some of these contagions can start to arise when you're communicating these messages. And if you do have a chain or security module that gets compromised, theoretically, and I realize it's still so early, ZK is supposed to solve that so that there is no contagion that can happen when you're sending something with a proof. Is there a world where Hyperlane adopts ZK technology and goes the shared route? Like,
yes, but basically, like the way that would happen is so. Hyperlane like already has, so just last week, one of the, a module that kind of wraps the succinct prover kind of reached its code completion phase. And previously there was one from Electron Labs. So in that sense, like ZK is available through the Hyperlane system, where the limiting factor is, well, where is that module running? And so again, you know, like, yes, it's running on Ethereum. So like you can use outbound from Ethereum, but is someone running it on like, you know, Andy's rollup? Not yet. And so like once some ZK technology becomes completely ubiquitous and is so easy and cheap to run that it can be run everywhere, you can definitely see that becoming like shared within the scope of that module. And people could have even like silos of that if they wanted to. But it becomes far less like imperative to do that. And the nice thing is like, right, that's not happening tomorrow, but it could very well happen in the next 5 years. And so with Hyperlane, we wanted to design a system that people can build on without being concerned for like, well, in a year's time, 2 years time, 3 years time, as the state of the art advances, do I have to rip everything out and start from scratch? Or can I just keep everything I have, use the same interfaces, and then, hey, I was using this module over here, and now I can use that module over there. And basically, like, that change process looking as simple as, like, updating a single contract to, like, change it to another different address, or you know, redeploying like a new version, but either way, like keeping everything else the same. Because we definitely like, you know, we are big believers in this technology. I've spent a lot of time on the ZK front, both like seeing the hardware that accelerates, as well as like the latest on the software side. It is coming. Like there, it is sort of like inevitable. But it's the same way that like, you know, 1995, I remember like we had a 64 megabyte hard drive. Trying to install like the first Command and Conquer was like, what? It's 40 megabytes? This is bananas. It's going to take it. But 3 years later, like the storage space expanded by, you know, an exponential relationship. And now like you could go ahead and you could buy like a terabyte, you know, like SSD drive for like basically nothing. So that is all to say that I think by the end of the decade, ZK is going to be much more ubiquitous. And so we are trying to build a system so that it can adapt to that with like minimal disruption.
In practice, does that mean there's a modular consolidation to a single security module?
There might be. It's like it's through time. You know how like a lot of people will say that like all of tech has been like the bundling and unbundling of different services. And so like right now we're in this great unbundling where like things are, you know, separating, and now we need to build the connective tissue to do that. But the next phase of growth might be a consolidation, and then a further unbundling and a further consolidation. I think actually, like, if you study, you know, the history of technology, you do actually see like a lot of these bundling and unbundling, or like expansion and consolidation cycles.
That's it. I'm out.
Yep. This was great, guys. This is a lot of fun. Anytime. I'll come on anytime. You guys are the best.